Kyle, thanks so much for joining us today on Face the Facts. It's great to see you again.
Likewise, good to see you, April. I always feel like I'm underdressed when I hang out with you, by the way.
Well, you could never be underdressed. I love the background. I love your new setup. And we're going to get into talking about where people can really hear you on a weekly basis on your podcast. But before we get started, for those who aren't aware, you are the FBI whistleblower, a true hero to Americans. Thank you again for your service. I know this was a hard decision, but you have a love for country and a love for your family, and you want to see your children be raised in the America that you remember it to be, the way that you were raised. And that's why you and I both are cut from the same cloth in that sense. So thank you. Your story broke news several months ago, but then again, you joined Project Veritas in Arizona at Turning Point USA's AmFest. And so Kyle, now you're looking at a whole new life. You've basically lost your job with the FBI for standing up and doing the right thing. Give us a quick 30-second recap of the materials that you supplied to Project Veritas, that many of our listeners and viewers remember this making big headlines regarding how the FBI was targeting conservatives and military members.
Yep. So there was a couple different documents, but the one that people will remember is something Ted Cruz went out and put on the floor of the Senate when he was directly, you know, face to face with Chris Wray. And that is the Militia Violent Extremist Symbols Guide. It showed things like the Betsy Ross flag, the Gadsden flag, which is the, you know, the come and take it, or, you know, don't tread on me rather. And then the come and take it, which is the Gonzales 1835 battle flag, which I used to have in my gym, actually. And so many veterans are a fan of these types of symbols. Apparently, the FBI felt like having those could make you a potential indicator of domestic violent extremism, also known as militia violent extremism. So I did that. I also exposed another document that showed that the FBI considered misinformation and disinformation, which you and I might know as free speech and freedom of thought, as actual election crimes. And so they put that out from an intelligence unit at headquarters. And so I went to that, and those were all public, you know, before I actually ended up talking to Dan Bongino. And that's kind of where I kind of started going public. But yeah, I initially started talking to people in Congress, sharing this information, then it obviously went to Veritas and was made quite public. So that was good.
Yeah. And thank you, by the way, for that. What was it like to be working within the FBI, seeing these internal documents come across? Were you and others in your sphere of influence, were you guys all just like, what in the world is happening? Or do you feel like you're kind of alone in those thoughts?
No, I mean, it's heartbreaking. There's a lot of people in the FBI that I know, like the kind of people that are going to be friends with a guy like me. They probably have a gun hanging on their wall, and they probably have an American flag and a, you know, some patriotic symbols in their gym. So, you know, the one who actually ended up handing me one, the initial militia violent extremist piece, is a combat veteran, a Marine Corps officer, and he's a supervisor at headquarters of all things. So not to get too public about how he came about it, but you know, there's a lot of people that are very patriotic Americans that are feel disgraced by what the FBI has done to its own reputation and their reputation by extension. A friend of mine who is a long time, and I say he has something like 28 years of service to the FBI, and a wonderful person, Army veteran and a great guy. And he told me that when he wakes up in the morning and he goes to work, he sees himself on the way out. You know, we don't wear a uniform, obviously, but he checks himself out in the mirror on the way out the hallway. And he said now he is ashamed to tell people he's an FBI agent. And that wasn't always the case. In fact, it was the thing that some people like, it was their proudest accomplishment in their life. And so for that to be the thing that the FBI has done to tarnish the badge, to remove a lot of the integrity that people used to see when you said those words, that now you're looked at with suspicion by at least half this country, and rightly so, that's, it's heartbreaking. There's no other way to do it. It's gut wrenching.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people have floated the idea of we need to completely dismantle the FBI, the CIA, these three-letter agencies that are not working for the people. What is your take on that? Is that realistic? And what would happen to those good guys within the FBI?
So people need to know that there are a lot of federal law enforcement agencies. There is a lot of federal law enforcement opportunities. It's so much so that like a special agent is not actually the job. That's just what the FBI calls people. You know, my job was criminal investigator. That's the title that the Office of Personnel Management has. And it's a job title that has a number associated with it, like everything in the government. It's 1811. And so 1811 criminal investigators, they're everywhere. They're in the Commerce Department. They're in the Small Business Association. They're in the Office of the Inspector General. So there are jobs for 1811s for special agents in the FBI if they didn't work for the FBI. Should we shut it down? Yes, I think so. Will we shut it down? No, I don't think so. I don't think anybody has the courage to do so. So that puts us in a weird spot, right? Where it's like, we know what the right answer probably is because these people have abused their authority to the point, and I don't think it could be salvaged. And it's not like anybody, like not you or I, if the FBI comes to your door, you don't want to talk to them, and I don't want to talk to them. And I used to work there. So, but you know, what does that tell you about sort of the nature of where we're at? What I do see is that if nothing else happens, it would be wonderful if they were able to break off the domestic intelligence mission that the FBI has bitten off since 9/11. And honestly, I say bitten off, like they advocated for it and then they were given it. It wasn't their choice to get it. You know, this was a George Bush policy. So if we were to break those sort of entities apart and have a domestic intel, or honestly, no domestic intel, but just intelligence on its own, and then the law enforcement be a separate entity, I think we'd be in better shape. I think we'd be in much more safe constitutional grounds. I'm not confident that will happen either. Unfortunately, I think because Congress just gave them another $1 billion. So they've got even a bigger budget this year than last.
Which is a scary thing. Do you think that anything can be done with this new Congress coming in? Have you heard any rumblings of anyone trying to tackle this as being something that they'd like to change or that they even could change?
I think they're going to try to expose things that are good for political points, like, you know, that are good optics and get them on Fox News kind of deal. That's what we've sort of seen so far. You know, I'm skeptical because when you have people that tried to run their campaign talking about X number of whistleblowers, like a number of those people are my friends and they've had their jobs pulled. They've had their paychecks pulled. They've been suspended indefinitely and they don't get to come back. And so you're going to campaign on those people. And then what? Then you're not going to call us after the election and you're not going to set up with us to be able to go do anything. There are other whistleblowers than me, but I don't think anybody has been quite as vocal as me or my friend, Stephen Friend, who is in Florida. And so if you don't want to hear from us, who are you hearing from? And I promise you, there is no more credible voices than, you know, what my buddy Steve said, which is that he got up and said, I'm not going to go enforce SWAT operations against people who were misdemeanor, you know, subjects. So when that happens, you know, I talked to Seb Gorka the other day, which is kind of funny. Like that's how radically my life has changed. I've gone from, you know, talking to bad guys who just got pulled out of a prison cell and we're debriefing them. We're talking to people on an Indian reservation who were making an allegation of, you know, rape or sexual assault. And now it's like Seb Gorka and Dinesh D'Souza are the people that are texting me, which is crazy. I mean, it's just crazy to me. I just laugh about it. My wife just goes, who is that?
I
go, it doesn't
I tell all the whistleblowers that come through Project Veritas. I'm like, I just want you to know, your life is going to radically change and it will be for the better, but it's going to be a crazy ride. And yeah, that's case in point there. I mean, your sphere of influence now has increased so much. The American people are hungry for truth. So they are eager to get behind you. And, you know, we want to solve this problem, but let's talk about the issue of the FBI being an intelligence agency. I mean, is that, when did that happen? When did they go from investigating things to intelligence?
Yeah, they, they've always had an intelligence mission. So the FBI was always sort of the domestic end that was supposed to look for counterintelligence, you know, counterintelligence threats, rather. So Espionage Act, this is your Robert Hansons, this is your Aldrich Ames. These are the spies that we remember from the 70s and the 80s. So it was always there, but it was kind of a small animal and it wasn't domestic. But after 9/11, we saw a real weaponization of the Patriot Act, of the FISA process, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which has been around for a long time. I believe, I could be wrong, but I believe Section 702 actually was introduced after that. And so, you know, I just literally did a long form interview yesterday with a former senior intelligence analyst who talked to me about how these tools, since basically September 12th of 2001, have been used against the American people, and they have just grown and grown and grown. And I've always seen sort of like a bridge. We looked for foreign terrorists. We looked for foreign spies. Those were our original kind of intents. And then we found this thing called homegrown violent extremists, which is to say they live in America. They were either born here or grew up here, but they're associated with a radical ideology that's overseas. And so that's HVEs. And once you do that, now you're looking domestically. So now you start finding people like you and me, and we're domestic violent extremists because we're speaking against the government. And that's really super dangerous.
Kyle, where do you think this is going to go from here? I mean, we're getting into 2023, taking a look at what's happened to the J6ers, the nonviolent J6ers who are still awaiting their trials. They're caught, their lives are caught in limbo. Their lives have been destroyed. Why? Because they just showed up. Many of them didn't do anything wrong, and yet we're seeing how they've been made an example of. Do you see this monster growing into, an average mom and dad who might have posted a picture on their Instagram or Facebook with a Betsy Ross flag in the background? Do you see it getting to that point where Americans are going to be worried about the FBI knocking on their door because of things that they're posting on social media that really should have just been a patriotic statement?
That might be hyperbolic for today. I hope that that continues to be a hyperbolic statement, but based on the speed that I'm seeing the FBI hit the gas, you bring up the J6ers and what happened to them. First of all, I talked to some of them. They've already served prisons or to sentences for 3 months, for 60 days. I talked to Simone Gold the other day, also wild and weird. But knowing that these people went to jail like that, they've already done that. And so not only did Congress give the FBI another $1 billion, they went from like 9.7 to 11.3 billion, so maybe $1.5 billion. The FBI has announced that they're going to arrest another 900 to 1,000 people this year. So that doesn't look to me like an agency that has taken a moment of self-reflection and said, maybe we pump the brakes on this thing. I'm not sure what we're doing. No, they are full speed ahead. And so the possibility of coming after, we were already talking about investigating parents for showing up and protesting CRT, critical race theory, or radical gender ideologies that they didn't want. So how far are we away from that just expanding into something other? It really depends on the political climate at DOJ and how wild President Biden wants to get as far as his recommendations, and how spineless the Attorney General wants to be, and I'll just say it that way. And I think we've already seen that Director Chris Wray is not willing to stand up to DOJ in any way, shape, or form. He's a go along to get along guy. He was always a swamp creature, I think. I don't like that term as much, but he was the guy that did the Bridgegate fix for Chris Christie. That's how he got recommended into the job. So what the heck is he doing? I mean, he's gone back and forth against DOJ. He's worked for there, and he's worked for the Bureau now. And it's like, what do you know about law enforcement? And that's been demonstrated, obviously, by his most recent little op-ed that he put in Fox News.
Let's talk a little bit about your specific situation in the FBI, looking back to when we were in the middle of the COVID pandemic, I'll say. And you were dealing with all kinds of ridiculousness happening, showing up to your job. Tell us a little bit, walk us through what life was like that ultimately led you to this point of just absolute frustration. But let's talk about COVID because this is something that people all across America had to deal with as well, who were fighting back against their corporations, as well.
I mean, I'm by no means unique in this situation, but so I got COVID in late October of 2020, or maybe early November. My wife was pregnant at the time. I had two small children. The answers were not totally obvious, except that it didn't bother children. We didn't really know about pregnancy. There were no shots or any other options. There was no real good therapeutics. There was a kind of rumor of, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and whatever that might have been. And so that's where I got it, and I recovered from it okay. It was, a couple of weeks away from work, came back in. I was incredibly busy through 2020. I didn't slow down at all for the so-called pandemic part of it because I was away from home for 120 days that year, doing counterterrorism surveillance and working on an Indian reservation in the middle of nowhere in Montana, which was amazing, and just doing the job that I signed up to do because that's what I believe. That's what was called, I'm called to do. So I did that. In 2021, I transferred to New Mexico and I moved to Las Cruces, which is a little town just north of El Paso. And when I was out there, you assume that when you leave Washington, D.C., you're leaving politics, you're leaving the chaos of that, and you're moving into a simple life, which was my goal. And I was assigned to the Mescalero Apache Indian Reservation, which is also something no one's ever heard of. And my job was to be like one of the three detectives doing major crimes, whether they be sexual assaults or they be homicides or, domestic battery or whatever. And so that's what we would do, just investigative. And that's what I thought I was going to do. And then suddenly we get this executive order coming down, which was 14043. And, Joe Biden's administration pushed down this thing saying everybody's going to get these shots, whether you like it or not. The FBI refused to acknowledge religious accommodation requests. They just didn't process them. They accepted them. They moved the goalpost on them. They changed them a bunch of times. And so that was step one for me. And I was like, well, that's a problem. Because under no circumstances am I going to get the shot. And then they came up with this illogical routine where we were supposed to test for COVID when we didn't have symptoms for COVID, even though we were running out of tests in this country every 72 hours in order to report for duty. And so, you know, I immediately alleged that this was discriminatory because they denied my request for that. Like, that's discrimination. First of all, we knew by that point, we knew everybody could get COVID. Like, if you got COVID, anybody could have it. Didn't matter if you had shots or not. So that was already obvious. And it's even funnier that not only did they say that, you know, it was every 72 hours, when I protested against that, 20 days later, Jen Psaki got up in front of the American public and said, you know, the American people think that it's totally reasonable for you to test for COVID once a week in order to come to work. And suddenly that was the FBI's policy every, you know, every 7 days. So I watched them move the goalposts. There's no science in that.
No,
they said that you had to be 6 feet away from each other when you were at work, if you were unvaccinated, but 8 feet, if you were eating or drinking. Like, our hallways are not 15 feet wide. So this is illogical. And so none of these things were, you know, implemented. And they also said,
and
we were
masking,
all supposed to
mask. Were they forcing you mask?
They claimed they were, but nobody ever told me anything. Like, nobody ever stopped me for wearing a mask because I didn't wear one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I just kept like a drink cup with me, and I just, you know, sipped water all day long. And it's like, well, I'm always drinking. So I don't know. I live in the desert. It's hot out here. And, and that was it. And so, like, you could just tell how absurd it was. And it was so dumb to the point where I actually went to a training event. And after being out in the desert training, and literally like 400 yards wide, 400 yards deep and 50 yards wide, 20 people out on there in the middle of the desert and nowhere in New Mexico on White Sands Missile Range, I got my pay docked for the day because I didn't test for COVID before I came out there, even though I'd already completed work and I'd already been approved for leave. So I wasn't even supposed to be paid for work. I was supposed to be
outdoors, like 100%. Outdoors, not near anybody.
That's right. So when you do that, and here's the thing, like I've been a paramedic for over a decade. I'm nationally registered. I've been licensed in several states. I've done hundreds, if not thousands, of nasal swabs. I know exactly what goes on when you're in there. I've been trained for, you know, infectious and biological warfare when I was in the military. So all these things were cartoon, you know, it's the equivalent of putting up a chain link fence to stop mosquitoes is kind of the size understanding. And none of us have mosquito chain link fences up, not even in Texas where there's a lot of mosquitoes. So it don't make any sense. It was real clear right up front. So that was for me.
So, and then what happened was you ended up fighting back against this. And then at what point did you decide to say, okay, enough is enough. I'm going public. I'm going to be a whistleblower.
So I started doing the whistleblower thing simultaneous to saying no to the COVID tyranny, really. So, you know, initially I put in a religious accommodation request in September of 2021. My whistleblowing activity started to Congress in October of 2021. And I went in with the now famous sort of EDU officials threat tag, which was an email that was sent out by the assistant director of counterterrorism saying exactly what we talked about a second ago. They were going to look at parents at school boards. And the FBI has argued, well, there's no indication that we were going to open investigations. This was one of their attorneys, and that's what the FBI, it's literally the Federal Bureau of Investigations. So I don't know what he thinks it is that we do in the FBI, but we open investigations when people make allegations that there's a problem. That's exactly what we do. And then a buddy of mine actually downloaded 39 of those individual cases and shared them with Jim Jordan's office, showing that in fact, they actually did do investigations. So of course
God
that
bless
was true.
Him, by the way.
Yeah, he's also lost his job. So he's lost his job. He's lost his paycheck. He's in the same spot as me. He just hasn't come public yet. And he very well may. But, you know, this is the kind of people that I want to work with, people of honor and integrity. And that's the kind of people I expected I was working with. And then you find out that, you know, your boss, who's otherwise a really decent human being and seems like a nice guy and I got along with well, tells me that he can't stand up with me because, you know, he's got alimony and a mortgage and he needs the paycheck for the next 3 years so he can retire. So that's how we got there. That's how America gets there. That's how we get to tyranny, is that you just try to comply your way through it.
Let's talk about how authoritarianism has invaded America. I mean, we've never seen this is unprecedented times to see our FBI be weaponized against the American people. It obviously didn't happen overnight. It is a tactic of the communists, but we're seeing something, as you and I were talking prior to recording, this is worse than communism because it's a complete authoritarian approach to how they're going to handle things and handle people. Why, where do you see, like, you know, I know you said earlier 2001 was when you noticed like a big shift in domestic terrorist focus, but where do you think?
Yeah. So So the FBI, you know, so I joined the FBI in 2016. I was, you know, I was still in college in 2020 or in 2001, but I saw what happened at 9/11, and you can look backwards through the history of the agency and kind of see that. I think the real thing that upsets people, particularly people like me, is that it's not like communism. It has a predictable outgrowth. Like, it's always going to be authoritarian. That's sort of the way that it's been implemented in this world. And it's always failed wherever it goes. But, you know, we have a democratic process, a democratic republic that has provided for more freedom and more prosperity than anything in the history of, you know, human history. And so when that comes after you, when that entity, when that, you know, country decides to betray the faith that you have in it, it's a real stab in the back, particularly for people that are veterans, for people that are law enforcement, the people that are first responders that believe in the fundamental principles of the country. So as a veteran you know, I served in the Air Force, and as a guy who swore an oath again to the federal government, to the Constitution and to serve in the federal government as an FBI agent, it's the stab in the back. And the problem is we've seen so many of our country men and women are willing to accept it. That's the real crazy part. That if you had told me what had happened in 2020, and if you told me that when I was in college, I would have told you you're out of your damn mind. There's no other way around it. It's full crazy that we voluntarily muzzled ourselves as a society, that we refused to talk about contrary viewpoints, and that we just wouldn't allow our neighbors to live their lives the way they wanted to, and that we thought we had some business getting in there and telling them what we were going to inject into them. That is not the country that you or I grew up in. You know, that's not how it was in the 80s. It's not how it was in the 90s. And it certainly wasn't like that beforehand. It's just, it's wild. And it feels like a big betrayal. That's what stings.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think the American people are at their wits' end of what do we do now? There's half of the country that recognizes that this is happening. There's another half of the country that is completely brainwashed and has been effectively bred to be walking little socialists and communists that don't have critical thinking skills. So this is the 11th hour that we're in our nation, and we're at a critical turning point. Do you have, I have a feeling, you know, what you're going to say, but what are your thoughts for how 2023 is going to go with what you know about the plans of the FBI and just in general, the course of our nation? We just had a crazy week happening as Congress came back in, a lot of division, and circusry, I think, on the Republican Party's part. But your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a possibility that 2023 can be incrementally better than the year before. It really depends on every single individual American making certain choices. And so I am not really good at prediction. I think you may have seen the same speech I did when I was watching Tucker Carlson speak at AmFest. And he said, you know, I'm out of the political prediction game. Like, I can't say what's going to happen next. I'm kind of in that. I don't claim to be a prophet by any means. So I will say what I hope. I think that's probably as good as I can get. And what I hope is very similar to when you and I shared a stage up there in Phoenix, is that people decide to draw a line in their sand, their own line, the one that they are willing to defend, that involves the Bill of Rights and the Constitution of the United States, and that they personally decide to defend that as citizens, not as a military member and not as a law enforcement officer, but as a human being who lives in this country that wants freedom. The only way this works is you decide, like, you're right, the 11th hour, I always say we're on the last hill, like we're on it. Mm-hmm. This is the hill. So you now decide whether you want to have totalitarianism that's very comfortable and you can hang out in your house and they'll weld it shut and they'll bring you Netflix and you can, you know, watch stuff like that. And maybe Costco delivers to you and Amazon brings you products and you're good to go. If that's the world you want to live in, it's very comfortable and you are going to be controlled. The alternative is it's a little dangerous. It's a little bit scary. Sometimes it involves risks, but it is, you know, the American experience that is more close to the 200 plus years that, you know, precede us. And that means things might get spicy. Things might get sideways. That's the nature of the world we're living in. Accept your own personal risk and your own responsibility and do the right things. That means you have to take care of responsibility for your kids. You got to go out there and take responsible for your own personal safety. You got to be looking around. You know, everybody's got a different level of risk and you don't all have to carry a gun. I'm not saying that, but everybody needs to know that, like, you're your own first responder. There's nobody that's coming to save us. It's up to us. And there's actually a famous t-shirt that says that from a company called 30 Seconds Out, another military brand. So people who've seen that will know it. It's up to us. That's it. There's nobody else that can do this. So every single person, and I'm really hopeful they kind of join me on the same path. Like, it's not comfortable, as you, as you and I have talked about, you know, plenty offline, but it is required if you want to live in a free society.
Well, God bless you, Kyle. I'm so grateful for you and for your courage and bravery. We need a thousand more Kyle Serafins out there to speak up and show up and stand up. Tell everyone where they can find your podcast. You've got a great podcast.
Yeah, so we just got it kicked off, and there's a couple episodes up, but they can find it on Rumble if they want to watch the video version. And then otherwise, they can go to Podbean, and it's on all the places you'd find it, like Apple and Spotify, if you want to hear the audio piece. And we do long-form interviews on Mondays, so if you want to listen to an insider, people that won't talk to other people, generally speaking, they speak to me because we speak the same language, you know, from the Intel community and so on. And then we do some analysis throughout the week on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Awesome, Kyle. Thank you so much for joining us today. Can't wait to have you back on.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, April.